DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, a couple things before we get rolling here officially on the program today. Coming up in a few minutes, you're going to want to hear from former Georgia quarterback DJ Shockley. I'm going to play you some audio from him as a part of a video show that we're going to be doing on Friday, celebrating Dog Nation Invasion. Really cool stuff with Shockley in terms of how he is helping Georgia quarterback Justin Fields. You're going to want to hear this coming up in just a moment. I'll also tell you this straight off the top tonight, that if you can be in the Atlanta area, really in any way, shape, or form tonight at 6 p.m., the place you're going to want to be is at Marlowe's Tavern tonight for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview. Jeff's in telling me there from 6 to 8 p.m. It's 4156 La Vista Road in Tucker. We'll be talking about the LSU game. We're doing a lot of behind-the-scenes recruiting talk. It all goes down at the Marlowe's at North Lake, our first time being at the North Lake location. I cannot wait to see many of you there. I will also say this, that Ed Orgeron may have accidentally given Georgia some bulletin board material. I'll get to that coming up in a moment. But before that, speaking of Orgeron, Coach O, as he's called, let's begin today's show with a little audio from him, looking ahead to the matchup against Georgia on Saturday, throwing some compliments the way of the Georgia offense. And one of the names he mentions in particular here is Georgia running back DeAndre Swift. And one of the things that I think is cool about what Orgeron says here, he actually compares Swift to one of the great running backs in recent LSU memory here, saying he's a little bit like Darius Geis, the guy who had starred for the Tigers the last couple of years before getting drafted by the Washington Redskins and then obviously tearing his ACL. But a nice comparison here from Orgeron talking about DeAndre Swift. And for Orgeron, he's not just impressed with Swift, but he's impressed with the entire crop of Georgia running backs. Here is Ed Orgeron saying some good things about DeAndre and the rest of the Georgia running back crew here.
Able to change direction. He reminds me of Geis in a lot of ways. You know, he's 5'9", 215. He runs inside. They run what we call the down play. He runs on the inside leg of the center behind a good offensive line. He's going. He can change direction east and west just like that. He can run you right over and can catch the ball. And plus, he has a lot of backup. He can stay fresh. Those guys come in, you just can't tell the difference. It looks like they have about five or six backs that can play in the NFL. Very, very impressive.
If you listened to yesterday's show, I talked to Chip Towers about this, and if you will read in the pages of DogNation.com coming up in the days ahead, our Cover 4 piece, one of the things that I wrote in Cover 4 was one of the most exciting moments for me thus far this season was the catch and then run that led to a touchdown for DeAndre Swift against Vanderbilt. Swift is the guy, I think, on Saturday that showed what we all loved about him back during his freshman season of 2017. And for whatever it's been worth, for whatever's been going on, we haven't necessarily seen that much of Swift in that regard, that explosiveness that he showed last year. He hasn't always shown that here in 2018. Maybe it's the groin injury. Maybe it's something else. We don't really know. At least I won't pretend to know on that. But what I do know is on Saturday, even though the overall numbers aren't necessarily spectacular, there was only like 99 total yards from scrimmage. But when he had the football in his hand, he was explosive. And as Orgeron mentions, it wasn't just him in the running back position. We saw James Cook get more carries on Saturday than we've been seeing him get. When Elijah Holyfield toted the rock, he looked really good in doing that explosive, great touchdown run. I think Brian Harrigan's proved a lot this season. I think Georgia fans would agree with Orgeron's assessment of those Georgia running backs right now, even though the numbers individually for these guys haven't really matched what Chubb and Michelle did a year ago. The group overall, I think, does give Georgia a real chance on the road against LSU and in all of these tough games coming up in the weeks after that. On the subject of the Georgia offense, Orgeron also talking a little bit about Jake Fromm here. And once again, Orgeron tossing some compliments the way of the Georgia star here. He likes what he's seen in totality from Fromm thus far this season.
Smart. Can throw the deep ball. Play action pass. He's protected well. He is surrounded by great athletes, can move in the pocket, bootlegs, nakeds, waggles, all that stuff, can run if he has to. And then if they want to go dual threat quarterback, they'll bring in Justin Fields. So they've got it all.
I think one of the things that's interesting about that clip from Orgeron talking about Fromm, he says he can throw the deep ball. And it's easy to imagine Orgeron saying that while also thinking about the 75-yard touchdown that Fromm through to Terry Godwin on Saturday. And this may be an example of the exact opposite of what we say from time to time before a big game. If Georgia's playing lowly Vanderbilt with LSU looming the following week, sometimes the conventional wisdom is don't show too much on film. Don't give LSU too much of an idea of what you might do in the game that next Saturday. But there's also something to be said for do show some things on film. make them think that you're capable of throwing deep at any moment. All of a sudden, Grant Delpit, that great LSU safety, all of a sudden he's staying back a little more. All of a sudden he's not coming up trying to make an impact on the intermediate passing or outs of the running game. All of a sudden he's having to play a center field and the thought that maybe Terry Godwin or Mecole Hardman is going to run deep there again. Sometimes the advantage in terms of the chess match of coaches from one week to the next is not about what you hide from a game plan before you play an opponent. It's what you showcase and make them think about. And Dave Aranda, who is a good LSU defensive coordinator, and Orgeron, who's got a defensive mind, no doubt LSU will be looking at some of the things that Georgia showcased against Vanderbilt in terms of the overall potentially limitless degree of weapons that Georgia could use in the game against LSU. From that standpoint, that may be smart. But maybe the opposite of smart is some of the things that Ed Orgeron said about the Georgia defense. Now, let me be clear before I jump into this. It is not my official position to make this into a thing. I don't think that Ed Orgeron truly is giving Georgia bulletin board material here, but I do want to play you a couple clips. And my only point is that Orgeron, for all his sort of comic, his accent's obviously the kind of thing that people make fun of a lot. There are a lot of Orgeron impressions. He is just a different kind of SEC coach than some of the other coaches out there. This may be an example, because when asked about the Georgia defense, he just says a couple of things here that other SEC coaches wouldn't say. And there are plenty of reporters, I'm sure, if they were sitting at this desk next to me right now, would say it's good that he's a little more, I guess, forthcoming, or maybe a little more unfiltered. Most SEC coaches are just very careful not to say anything that could be taken the wrong way. And I don't think that what Orgeron says here should be taken the wrong way. But I can't help but notice that it's just a little different than the typical SEC coach would say. First of all, he's asked, hey, Kirby Smart's been at Georgia now for 3 years. I guess you also knew him going back to his time in Alabama here. What is the hallmark, the personality of a Kirby Smart coached defense? And here is where, I don't want to say it's a problem because it's not, but here's where the potential problem for Orgeron begins. Take a listen.
Yeah, he plays base defense a lot. He doesn't have to blitz. They don't have a lot of sacks. They do affect the quarterback. They stop the run. They're big. He's a 3-4 team. They tackle well. Have big, impressive personnel, and their corners lock up. They can play 8 men in the box, and they can play man coverage with anybody they want to.
I mean, for the most part, everything he says there is true, but most SEC coaches would not point out, you know, the weird thing about Georgia is they just don't have a lot of sacks. I mean, it's almost like he puts himself in the role of analyst there and starts talking about, you know, what Georgia has done, hasn't done, as opposed to like what Kirby Smart and a lot of other coaches do in that situation is just kind of toss out some blanket, relatively hollow, empty compliments and just sort of move on, because the last thing they want to do is turn a conversation into a thing. But when Orgeron is, you know, dealing out that information with the Georgia defense and says, you know, they actually don't have that many sacks. Well, it's not too long later in the press conference on Monday that another reporter kind of takes the bait on that and says, hey, Ed, you said that Georgia doesn't have any have a whole lot of sacks. Why do you think that Georgia doesn't have a whole lot of sacks? And once again, here's where Orgeron kind of just sets himself apart as a very different kind of SEC coaches. Most SEC coaches would not respond to that question with this answer, but here's Coach O once again.
I think that it's more the way they affect the quarterback. I know they lost a couple of guys in first-round draft choices. They don't have the speed off the edge, but they're still dangerous. They're physical. They're one of the best defenses in the country. I think that their philosophy is more or less is affecting the quarterback, pass rush lanes, make you get rid of the ball quick.
As I said, it's not my intention to make more of this than it deserves. I don't think this is official bulletin board material. As bulletin board material goes, this is probably pretty tame, but most SEC coaches would not evaluate their opponent's pass rush by saying, yeah, they just don't quite have the same speed off the edge as they did a year ago. I mean, you're going to tell DeAndre Walker that he's too slow to get to the quarterback against LSU? Do you want to really give him that little extra edge on Saturday? I'm not sure it makes that big of a difference, but most coaches would just sort of sidestep the whole thing overall. But Ed Orgeron is a different kind of guy in that regard, and a different kind of guy in such a way that most LSU fans are very happy with that personality. It seems to fit what they're trying to do there. And for Georgia fans, it's also a chance to prove as you go into Baton Rouge on Saturday that some of what has been shown offensively against Vanderbilt can maintain its way for the second half of the season. And that Georgia pass rush maybe that Orgeron says is too slow to get to the quarterback, well, maybe on Saturday the Dogs will be able to prove him wrong on that. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and good to have you with us live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, radio at noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, Apple Podcast Player, Google Podcast Player, the world famous DogNation.com, and everywhere in between. We're just glad you're with us today and glad to have Marco's Pizza with us as well. And by now, you know, I've been saying for a while that one of the great things to do when you don't feel like cooking, as I look out to my left, it's a pretty dreary day here today. A great chance to sort of stay indoors tonight and say hello, Primo, with two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each. It's every store, every day, the Italian way, authentic Italian quality pizza at a great price. No promo code, remember, or coupon to clip. It's just every store, every day, the Italian way at Marcos.com. Really good stuff there with them. We're going to get Jeff Sintel here coming up in a moment. A lot of recruiting stuff to get to with Jeff in the aftermath of busy weekend for visitors, the decommits, and some new offers going out. It's going to be a big blanket conversation with Jeff, and Jeff's also going to be with us tonight at Marlowe's Tavern at 6 p.m. I'm excited about that. Before we get to that, though, let's go around the doghouse here today, brought to you by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in beautiful Towns County, Georgia, the banks of Lake Chattoog. And one of the things that we're going to do on Friday, and you've been hearing me tell you about this for a while, and I'm going to keep telling you about it, is we're going to do our Dog Nation Invasion special. It's our preview show. We're going to do it live from New Orleans on Friday afternoon. And the show is really going to be a collection of great former Georgia players who've had big moments in games against LSU in the past. And obviously in a conversation like that, one of the names that immediately comes to mind as a guy you got to have is former Georgia quarterback DJ Shockley, because Shockley had the great moment against LSU in the 2005 SEC Championship. It was a thrilling moment as a fan for me to be in the building that day and watch Georgia pull the upset. LSU was a pretty big favorite there that day and get a second SEC Championship for Mark Richt. It was a big deal for Shockley on a personal level, though. As many of you longtime Georgia fans will remember, Shockley had been on the team in 2002, in 2003, in 2004, had shown flashes that he could be a great college quarterback much the same way that the starter David Green was. But Shockley had to wait his turn, and he chose to wait his turn. He didn't transfer, didn't go somewhere else. He chose to stick around at Georgia, and it ultimately paid off to the tune of an SEC championship and the legacy now being remembered as an all-time great. As a part of the video show that you'll see on Friday, I had a chance to ask DJ Shockley, did it make it more sweet knowing how patient you had to be to actually get to that point back in 05? And I thought that DJ Shockley had a great answer.
Yeah, you have no idea what it felt. I mean, it was one of those moments that you think about. I know I thought about it for my entire time at the University of Georgia, wanting to be in that spot where I could, you know, really help this team win a championship, and to have the opportunity to go out there and play in that ball game versus a team like LSU, who a lot of people thought could possibly have been playing their way into the national championship game that year. And to do it in the fashion we did, it was just so satisfying for me to see everything come full circle, see the ups and downs, thinking about, hey, I thought about leaving and end up staying, and you got 1 year to prove it. And to get to that point and then for it to all work out at the end was so gratifying for me and a bunch of my teammates as well.
I think Georgia fans are happy to hear that DJ Shockley is happy, right? I mean, you want guys to have great memories of their great moment, especially when so many of us have so many great memories of that same time. You're glad to know that for DJ Shockley, he can look back on that time and say, yeah, it really worked out the way that I wanted it to. And it's also relevant now in 2018 because you got Justin Fields, a backup quarterback, who's kind of going through some of the same stuff. Now, he hasn't been forced yet to be quite as patient as DJ Shockley was for over the course of 3 years of being a backup before he finally got to be a starter. But also in 2018, the cycle sort of spin a little faster here as well. And young kids may be just a little bit more impatient than they once were. So if Fields is dealing with some of the same kind of stuff that DJ Shockley may have dealt with then, what you hope as a Georgia fan is that maybe Shockley can impart some wisdom on Fields and tell him how to handle the road that he's about to navigate this season and for the rest of his Georgia career. And according to Shockley, that's exactly what has happened here. They have spent a little time together. And I think for Georgia fans, you love the idea of the wisdom of Shockley impacting the youth and athleticism of Justin Fields. This is a cool line from Shockley. You'll see more of this on Friday, but take a taste of it right now.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to talk to him. I had a chance to actually sit down with him when he first got to Athens, and then I talked to him a little bit during the summer, and then we kind of, you know, go back and forth through text messages at times. And the biggest thing that I told him was, when you do get your opportunity, don't try to do too much. And obviously this is a tough situation to be in, because similar to how I was, he's coming in highly recruited. He's never had to sit behind anybody. He's never had to wait, and now he gets thrown into a game where maybe he's not always ready to go because he has to take time to get ready and going, and it's a little bit different feeling. So I just told him, just make sure you're always prepared, you're always ready, prepare like you're the starter in practice. You know, make sure that the coaches, your teammates, they all have the confidence in you so that when you do come in, people don't look at it as a step down. And you go in and you keep the ship rolling. That's the biggest part of it. And the last part was you got to make sure you take care of the football, because that's the last thing they want to do is change up the rhythm of the starter and you come in and turn it over and everybody thinks, hey, we've lost possession. And I think he's done a great job of that so far. He's done a great job of taking what the defense has given and using his athleticism, you know, kind of to his advantage at times too. So he's a smart kid. He's a guy that understands his role right now. But one thing I do know about Justin is he wants to be the guy, and he's going to keep fighting until that point happens.
Great stuff there from DJ Shockley. Great wisdom and a huge impact, you got to imagine, on Fields, who does want to be great and does want to be the guy. And eventually here at Georgia, he's going to get his turn to do that. A great way to go around the doghouse today on this Tuesday, presented by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. Of course, you know, fall leaf season in full gear there on the banks of Lake Chattoog. And Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, a great way to enjoy that, especially during the month of October right now, because there are a couple of away games for Georgia. There's a bye week coming up. And Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa is the place that you want to go for all of that. And right now, you know, football season, one of those times that you kind of get yourself in the doghouse. Well, here's a great way to get out of the doghouse right now with Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa's Get Out of the Doghouse giveaway. It's North Georgia's premier mountain resort. It's just 2 hours away from Atlanta in Towns County, Georgia. And one lucky winner is going to receive a 4-day, 3-night trip or two that includes spa treatments, stable rides, on the horse trail there, 2 rounds of golf, and a whole lot more. It is going to be an awesome giveaway, and you can get your chance to win by going to the website that you see on your screen or the one that I'm about to read to you. It's getoutofthedoghouse.com. Dog, of course, spelled D-A-W-G. Getoutofthedoghouse.com. Check that out online. Register for your chance to win. And, of course, it's great to have Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa as a part of Around the Doghouse each Tuesday here on Dog Nation Daily. Good to have you with us as well. It's time to find out some more about UGA recruiting and get ready for a big night tonight at Marlowe's Tavern there in Northlake. Let's talk to Jeff Sintel here for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-off.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, so our interview with Jeff Sintel here today for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-off is going to require a little bit of an explanation. When you listen to the rest of the podcast later on, or if you're listening on the radio, one of the things you're going to hear is me very sad and dejected for a few minutes about not having Jeff on the show today. If you watched on video, we did not have Jeff on the show. We had a technical issue. We have corrected the technical issue now, and for the audio audience, both on radio and podcast, we get a chance to talk to a Jeff Sintel for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. And so, Jeff, I am really excited about having you on the program here today. I appreciate your time, including a little overtime here, having to get this figured out. So when people later on hear me sad about not having you, little did I know then that we're going to figure out a way to make all this work. So good to have you. Hello.
I guess this is the ghost of Brandon future and Brandon present taking care of a problem for the ghost of Brandon past.
I think that is well said, Jeff, in your most literary sense there. I'll also tell you I'm looking forward to seeing you tonight, Jeff. 4156 La Vista Road in Tucker for our Marlowe's at Northlake, our Dog Nation big game preview. One of the things, Jeff, I've heard so much is, when are we going to have Jeff Sintel back for a Marlowe's Tavern broadcast? Well, tonight is the night. Marlowe's there, Northlake location, rooftop location, a great venue, cool spot. Cannot wait to see you there at Marlowe's in Northlake tonight, too.
Yeah, it'd be great. First rooftop broadcast, I think, for the Daily Llama and his live streams and our shows. And goodness gracious, we do have a lot to talk about.
We do. And so let me try to do as much as we can here in a limited amount of time, because I don't want to keep you too long here. But there's a lot I want to discuss. Some of it recruiting-based. Before that, though, freshmanreportdognation.com. You know I love it each week. And, Jeff, for those of us who read it each week, one of the things that we're seeing here is some stair steps of progression for a couple of Georgia freshmen. I think by the time you get to November and December, this is going to be a big deal. Channing Tindall keeps getting more tackles each and every week. To have that guy more a part of the linebacking core by November, I think would be a huge deal. Jordan Davis. Kirby Smart even talked about him a good bit off the game on Saturday as that space-eating interior zero technique nose guard, thinking about him playing a larger role for Georgia, even though he was probably only in there on Saturday because of the injury to Devontae Wyatt. Nonetheless, as much as he did play and as much as Kirby talked about it, that's a potential foreshadowing of something that could be to come here. I think, Jeff, when you look at freshmen here, thinking about where those guys are now, where they could be by November, I think that's a really big deal.
Yeah, I think the thing that's interesting is, you know, some folks think that recruiting ratings don't matter, but if you look at the Bulldogs who have played in every game so far this year, who have burnt those red shirts, there are only 10 Bulldogs, and you'll see those 10 names occupying, I think, the top 13 or 14 rungs on the highest-rated recruits on the 2018 signing class board. The only exception would be the talented punter, Jake Cromarta, who punters are never going to get rated higher than three stars, kickers much the same vein. You see a lot of things, and, you know, Jordan's a guy where Georgia is getting knocked back on the line by a lot of teams that maybe shouldn't be knocking the number two team in the country off the line. I think Jordan Davis is a guy who slowly but surely needs to get in better shape, needs to lose some weight, but he has progressively started to see his minutes in practice move from half the time on the scout team to more time on the twos now. I think it's interesting in football, Brendan. It's always a next man up culture. And I think the slight injury suffered in practice to Devontae Wyatt gave Jordan Davis the ability to show what he could do against Vanderbilt at homecoming.
Let me talk about recruiting here for a moment. One of the things that got some attention on Saturday was the presence of the Hinton brothers, Miles and Chris Hinton there. Of course, Chris, the five-star Michigan commit. It doesn't sound like, I guess, at least based on some of the online chatter, that the optimism here is off the charts, but a flip from Michigan. But getting the guy on campus is the first step towards any eventual process here. What did you make of the Hintons being on hand for Saturday?
Well, I think I'm going to really not worry about that one unless he comes back for an official visit. This guy still seems to me to be very staunchly committed to Michigan. His brother, Miles, is also joining him on a visit later this year. Christopher Hinton is what he would prefer to be called.
Okay.
Christopher Hinton is still actively recruiting for Michigan. As we said before, I know he's one of the biggest pipe dreams for the class, but this family definitely values academics. And what they're looking for with parents that graduated from Notre Dame and Northwestern, the father, Chris Hinton, played many, many years in the NFL. I think he's on the short list in my book and in a lot of pundits' books about the most deserving players not to make the Hall of Fame. I think the big connection here is Miles Hinton. Miles is undecided. He's the nation's number one offensive tackle for 2020. He's also out of Greater Atlanta Christian. And I do think there is some sort of momentum or hope or just an exploration right now, let me say that best, for maybe the brothers can play together at the same spot. And I think that's still to be determined where Miles Hinton's best foreseeable future is. I would not forecast Georgia as the leader for Miles Hinton either. I think Georgia is firmly in the top five, maybe even top two or top three. But you notice that game, they had a chance to walk around. There's some pictures of Christopher Hinton on the Dog Nation Forum where I'm awfully fond of using the term battleships to describe large linemen with gigantic size, 18, 19 feet. I think that the term needs to be upgraded a little bit. I think those are aircraft carriers for one Christopher Hinton. So I would watch the visits, Brandon, here, watch them closely, and see if Christopher Hinton values Georgia enough to return for an official visit. I can say this. The Hinton family, the Godey family, the Blaylock family, those two families are all very close. They've grown up playing together and on the prospect stage through all the various cycles, middle school, junior football, everything like that. And I do know there is a strong kinship among those families.
I know that the J.D. Bertrand decommitment didn't catch you off guard, something I think you had been watching for the possibility of for a while there. But what do you make about that? What are your comments on that?
Well, he's a tremendous player. I think whoever gets him is going to be getting a very good player, a very heady player. But I think as I wrote, I believe I published it on Saturday morning with a storyline that was titled, "What's up with all these decommitments, man?" And I just think in the case of J.D. Bertrand, he committed so early July of 2017. And since that time, Georgia has signed guys like Quay Walker, Channing Kendall. You've seen Monty Rice show that he can do it on the SEC stage and perhaps be at times Georgia's most effective linebacker. And then you see the class of 2019 coming in with Georgia still staunchly going after five-star inside linebacker N'Kobe Dean. And they also have Trezvan Marshall and Ryan Davis also firmly in the class. I know that Dog Nation Daily fella is always hearing about Nate McBride and when that fella might play, as well as Jaden Hunter. Those guys are already in there going on their second and third seasons, their second seasons in Athens right now. I just think right now Georgia and J.D. Bertrand aren't the fit. J.D. Bertrand aren't the fit that they used to be. But I will say this, whether he ends up in Stanford where he has an offer, Notre Dame, Florida, LSU, whoever gets J.D. Bertrand is going to get one tremendous locker room presence. He's an Eagle Scout, one team leader, and one gritty, tenacious, physical football player. I think, you know, we throw out the term rich program problems a lot, and if you look at J.D. Bertrand's standing, I think he was number 312 overall in the country. And the way Georgia recruits now is they look for top 150, top 125, top 100 players at linebacker, especially I like N'Kobe Dean, who's rated as the nation's number one backer for 2019.
And, you know, as we talked about this on Friday, my feelings on this for the most part are pretty complicated because on the one hand, you know, I know people who know Bertrand. They're proud of him, you know, that he was going to have a chance to come to Georgia. They're still proud of him now when he goes somewhere else. Same way with guys like Jaden Perry, who's not going to be a part of this class now either. You know, these local Atlanta area kids, they wanted a chance to play for Georgia, and, you know, I liked them getting a chance to play for Georgia. And yet at the same time, as a fan, I obviously want Georgia to get the best overall class that it can possibly get. And I guess, Jeff, to sort of combine those two ideas into one, I don't think there is anything wrong with a program saying our valuation of you has changed. What we thought you were going to grow into, you're not necessarily growing into that. We're going to be very honest with you now. Now, the one thing I think you and I both would have a hard time with, if somehow this was coming from a dishonest place of, you know, either shutting off communication or just false communication. But as long as the communication is thorough and as long as it's detailed, even if it's not the news the recruit necessarily wants to hear, I don't think you can, you know, fault Georgia for wanting to go out and get the best recruits that it can get.
Yeah, I think I say this a lot. I think Georgia, the only obligation that the staff has to the program is to sign the very best 25 players, 24, 25, 26 players it possibly can every cycle. And if one of those players that was committed for a long time is no longer that guy or no longer one of those 25, then that forces some decisions that cause folks to verify and assume the burdens of making $7 million a year and millions of dollars. I think this can potentially look bad for Georgia in the short term, but I also think what's the greater long-term damage to a program? Is it short-term damage where Georgia looks bad for a week, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months? Or is it long-term damage when perhaps Georgia is not totally honest with a player and that guy is at Georgia for 1 year, 2 years, and is not playing and is not happy and is just trying to get on special teams as hard as the guys in that program work? I wonder if what's the greater damage, especially long-term to a program, especially at a school like Blessed Trinity, where they have some of the most sterling reputations in the state, a very fine group of men, a very fine group of coaches. And coaches talk, Brandon. And I think maybe the best way to look at this is maybe this isn't the perfect way to handle the thing right now, but maybe it's the best way Georgia can go about it. And I do feel it's better to do this now and give the young man some great options like he already has, rather than wait until December, rather than wait until the young man's on campus to already be brutally honest with it, because no one wants to see that. Everybody wants to have a fine college career. They want to play a long time. They want to experience college football and all the pageantry that goes along with it. And I think what J.D. Bertrand is doing right now, not feeling the fit is there like it was with Georgia, maybe that's a mutual thing, and he's going to look, and where he's going to wind up is going to be stinking happy that they've got a great football player and a great guy like J.D. Bertrand.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all with Jeff Sintel here on a Dog Nation Daily. And obviously, Jeff, Jaden Hazelwood takes his visit to Miami over the course of the weekend. Not a great game for Miami. They do win against Florida State. The passing offense that Hazelwood wants to see. He doesn't necessarily get to probably see a ton of that. Nikosi Perry's numbers, from what I understand, were not necessarily great there against the Seminoles. There's also some chatter about, you know, what it is that's drawing him to Miami. I guess some reports coming out of Miami that they're trying to use Thomas Brown, the former Georgia running back, and Mark Richt Stafford as a way to kind of get in good with Hazelwood there. I mean, what do you make about the potentially burgeoning relationship between Hazelwood and Miami here coming off the heels of his recent Georgia decommitment?
Well, I don't think it's burgeoning. I think it's kind of been cooking on the big green egg for a long time now. He made several visits to Miami. He likes lots of aspects about that lifestyle. He likes the recruiting pitch that he's hearing about he could be in the offense that launched A.J. Green to the NFL. My take on that is I think A.J. Green was who launched A.J. Green to the NFL.
No doubt.
Not some specific set of patterns, wide receiver training or play calls or anything like that. I guess what you're really looking forward to hear, Brandon, is I know that Georgia likes to line up some celebrities to call the dogs and to show up on game days. And I bet you're probably wishing and hoping that the Cincinnati Bengals and A.J. Green have an off week or a Thursday night game where perhaps he can show up at Georgia on campus at the same time that Jaden Hazelwood has his official visit. But I don't know if that's going to work out for everyone out there. They have a game that weekend when they play Auburn. But, you know, those impressionable things with the recruit. Everybody saw the social media about how Jaden Hazelwood met up with Michael Irvin at the, I guess it looked like on the 50-yard line of a stadium that was not filled to capacity prior to the game. And, you know, Jaden's also told me before that maybe one of the things he doesn't like about Miami is having to be in a bus and be bused 45 minutes away from campus to get to the stadium. And then if you have a big win, like a rivalry win over FSU, you have to bus all the way back to campus, and that kind of, you know, dampens the mood a little bit to some extent on a thrilling game day victory. But I think Jaden's just going to look around. I think maybe it was important, maybe it was telling that no important public commitment came immediately out of that Miami visit. It says to me that Jaden's going to take his time. He's going to make his official visits. He's told me, Brandon, in the end, that he won't be finally over until his official visits have all been taken. He's seen everything that is out there for the program. I'm sure he did notice, or I'm sure he's already heard about how well Georgia threw the ball last week against Vanderbilt. Those are the type of fireworks within the game plan that I'm sure he wants to see more of from Georgia. And in the end, he's going to weigh it all in and make his decision on the early signing period on December the 19th.
Do I have my information faulty here that while he has visited Miami a lot, this was the first time he had gone to a game there, though, right?
Yeah, I don't think he went to a game last year. I think he's been on campus a lot. I think he has visited the area as well when he's on 707 trips. But most of the time, Jaden Hazelwood made his visits to Auburn and Georgia last season. I'm not sure if he snuck down to Miami last year for game or not. But if I had to hedge a guess on that, I would say that he has not taken a visit to Miami for a game as of yet.
All right, a couple other things, Jeff, before we let you go here in our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, and we appreciate your time here. There is some chatter online about Brendan Costello, who is a three-star quarterback from San Clemente, California. His school is reporting on Twitter. I don't know if you call this a report, but they tweeted out that he had gotten an offer from Georgia. I guess he's an Oklahoma State commit. Do you think that Jeff, Georgia is in business to look for another 2019 quarterback here? Does that make sense for you that Georgia would be looking around for more quarterbacks? Got the John Rhys Plumlee commitment here in hand already. Maybe, you know, Rhys Plumlee also partially an athlete. What do you make of some chatter out there that Georgia might be looking around at more quarterbacks?
Well, there's been some chatter for maybe the last week or two, Brandon. Maybe even longer than that Georgia was looking to potentially see how and if a second quarterback could fit into the class. And that's very interesting because I think the numbers are there. I think they probably do need to take two quarterbacks, but I think Costello, who looks to me to be a kind of a short, another one of those guys that's not very big, Brandon. He's only about 6 feet tall, kind of definitely in that Stetson Bennett mold. He's only a three-star quarterback. He's committed to Oklahoma State, nation's number 22 overall dual threat prospect. But I think this is an area where Georgia's program can the stature of Georgia's program right now and against the national footprint the Bulldogs have can get some interest to a three-star quarterback prospect, even one that's committed to a throw-happy offense at Oklahoma State. I just think that Georgia's numbers, they just work out so much better with four scholarship quarterbacks. And if everybody has been paying attention, you've seen Georgia has had some ebbs and flows of late with the size of its 2019 recruiting class. And I think it's probably trying to trim in its 2019 class, I think it's trying to trim that one down in order to get to the final product that it wants to arrive at after National Signing Day, the traditional National Signing Day in February.
All right, last thing before we let you go. Tomorrow is decision day for four-star safety Lewis Cine. But while Georgia fans have a lot of optimism about Cine's announcement tomorrow on the video that drops, I guess he does visit for the LSU game on Saturday, Florida, and there is some chatter coming out of the online world that maybe he had a good time there in Florida. Everybody enjoys visits. That's not anything new. But is whatever happened for him in Gainesville a potential monkey wrench in the video and subsequent commitment for Lewis Cine tomorrow, you think?
Brandon, I mean, come on. Did you see those pictures of him holding up that powerful reptile in his hand?
I actually didn't see that. No, I did not see that. So he's holding up a gator? Is that what he's doing?
It sort of looks like a gator, but it is a very feeble-looking, scrawny gator, I guess. It looks like the thing is medicated. But, yes, he is
holding up an alligator. It's one of them gators that Jim McElwain recruited, one of those feeble, scrawny ones. That sounds like a Jim McElwain recruit.
Definitely a two-star gator he's holding in his hands. He was actually holding a gator in his hands along with, I think, looks like a Florida staffer or a position coach he was holding in his hands. And I think Dan Mullen has discovered the secret. If you put a live alligator in a picture with a gator jersey, I think a chatter starts to sprout up that the Florida Gators have made their move with Lewis Cine. In all honesty, Brandon, I think the official visits are supposed to go well. He's been looking to make up his mind after this official visit for weeks and weeks in advance of the Florida visit. So I would have to say it would have to be one of the greatest official visits in history for Florida, a late contender to the party here with Lewis Cine, in order for them to swoop in and maybe steal Lewis Cine away from schools like Texas and Georgia, where he's visited at least three times already, and even that Northeastern connection nearby for Penn State and the Boston area where he grew up from as well. And also the lure of playing in Don Brown's defense at Michigan. Don Brown features a physical safety that can kind of roam all over the field, much like Jabril Peppers. And those Wolverines do also have the number one defense in the country right now. So that would be perhaps one of the greater comebacks that Dan Mullen will ever engineer in his time at Florida, if he can come all the way back from maybe fourth or fifth in this chase and nab Lewis Cine on the heels of an 11th-hour visit.
So, in the past, some programs have had official visits get themselves in trouble with the NCAA. If what you say about this gator is true, this may be the first time that an official visit gets a program in trouble with PETA, Jeff.
We talk about blind squirrels. Maybe you ought to find a screenshot of that picture of Lewis holding the gator and use it in some of your programming during Florida Week, man, because I don't think that gator was scaring anybody in that photo shoot.
That is a great idea. Jeff, thanks for being with us here for our Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All. We'll look forward to seeing you here tonight at the Marlowe's in Northlake for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview, looking back on some big stories for Georgia recruiting and ahead of the game against LSU on Saturday. Thanks so much for your time. We'll talk to you then.
All right, guys. Have yourself a day. See everybody in Baton Rouge.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, real shame not to get Jeff Sintel on the program here today, but I have no fear. We'll see him tonight, 6 p.m. for our Marlowe's Big Game Preview. And, of course, hopefully back on Friday again. Phones up and running, hopefully, the way they're supposed to be here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Listen, this is live video. It's live podcasting. Plausibly live podcasting, anyway. I guess that's more audio on demand. You have some tricks from time to time, and that's what we dealt with there today. We're going to do our SEC through here. I want to touch on some of the games from the weekend that I haven't had a chance to talk about yet. Before I do, let me quickly also remind you of this, that you're heading into a big weekend of college football, which means a chance to get some big-time action down. And when you do get some action on games, You want a fast, no-hassle payout when you win. That's why you want my friends at MyBookie. It's the only service that we would recommend here at a Dog Nation Daily, because they are known for the fast, no-hassle payout when you win. And even better than that, right now, Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers can get their first deposit matched dollar for dollar. That means before you even make your first bet, you're already a winner, because your account essentially doubles right when you open it up for the first time there. But you got to use the promo code Dog Nation to do that. It's all one word, D-A-W-G, Dog Nation. That's spelled the way it's supposed to be. At MyBookie. Simply find them online, MyBookie. Find them online, use the promo code DOGNATION, and you can get your first deposit matched today. But you got to act right now. I have been told this offer could go away soon, so get in and go while you got a chance. Promo code DOGNATION, MyBookie. Find them online. You play, you win, you get paid. It is as simple as that. All right, 24/7 Sports is reporting about some turmoil at Auburn, and you have to be a subscriber to read the story, but it's been chatted about on a million message boards since it was first reported. According to the 24/7 Sports report, the best I can tell, I haven't read the full report because I am not a subscriber, but what message board folks are saying in response to it is some dissatisfaction from some Auburn players with Jared Stidham, that maybe Stidham is not, I think the phrase was used, too happy-go-lucky, that he's sort of bouncing around the locker room after the loss against Mississippi State, and that maybe turned some people the wrong way. Gus Malzahn, once again, it's always the tug of war with Malzahn and whoever his offensive coordinator happens to be, whether it was Rhett Lashley, who left the program, I think, because of that, Chip Lindsey, who came in. I think of Lindsey's a pretty good offensive mind, but apparently Lindsey's play calls, and he is supposedly the one that's calling the plays, according to this 24/7 Sports report, the best I can tell, that he is the one calling the plays, but they have to be filtered in through Gus Malzahn, which is pretty weird. Pretty weird, especially for an offense that's not really working very well right now. And we've already seen some Auburn players leave the program. There's rumors that by the end of the season, there could be an even bigger mass exodus of players getting out while the getting's good here. This is a drama farm. It always has been under Gus Malzahn. I guess it always will be. They cannot afford to buy out Malzahn. They just signed him to a $49 million extension or something crazy like that. But it is a mess. You can go to 247sports.com and read more about the situation there at Auburn. Georgia fans will obviously be eating that up. Speaking of reports, I thought that AL.com had a really interesting thing the other day about Nick Saban. We've been talking a lot about Alabama's cozy relationship with ESPN. I've said that I'm going to start calling him Stephen A. Saban, because Saban's on ESPN right now more than Stephen A. Smith is. Well, Rainer Saban, no relationship to a Nick, it's not even spelled the same way, at AL.com kind of wrote about and got some quotes from the ESPN side on this about why they cover Alabama as much as they do. The All-Access TV series, for instance, the huge number of interviews, and they make an undeniable point that as Alabama has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, public interest, even outside Alabama fans, has grown. They've become one of the name brands. That's true. And I would never say there should be some sort of cap or lid on how much coverage Alabama should get it from ESPN. I would never say that. But you can't help but notice that it almost ends up being a self-fulfilling prophecy that ESPN reports and covers on you as the biggest program in college football. You then get bigger because of that, which causes ESPN to cover you more. It ends up being this feedback loop that benefits both Alabama and ESPN. And case in point with what you see with the Alabama schedule, where they're blowing all these teams out, and yet the conversations about, oh, how great and dominant Alabama is, as opposed to, wow, Alabama, have they really played anybody as of yet? And so that's the kind of thing to think about, especially on the heels of 31 points being given up by Alabama to Arkansas. Nonetheless, a couple other issues from the weekend. Texas A&M beats Kentucky. It's the first time all year long, believe it or not, an SEC East team has lost to an SEC West team. It's been kind of a nice run for the East here in terms of rebalancing the league here. But Kentucky stays ranked but goes on the road, and as we thought might happen, does lose to Texas A&M. South Carolina beat Missouri. Backup quarterback Michael Scarnecchia gets in and has a good game. I thought there was a chance of Da'Kerion Joyner, the freshman, might play here, but this was Scarnecchia's game, and another moment for Drew Locke to prove that he's more than just a stats guy, more than he's just a draft, a draft profile guy, that he's really an impactful quarterback in the SEC, and he fails to get that done once again, and we'll make that your SEC through. And with that said, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, we'll turn our attention back to Georgia and LSU on Saturday, including some thoughts from Kirby Smart on the upcoming game. And the one thing, when you talk about Georgia and LSU, any team going into Death Valley, the one thing you have to acknowledge is that it's one of the toughest stadiums to play at of anywhere in the country, not just the SEC, but nationwide. But as Georgia heads to Death Valley, It does so with a chance to come out of the game with a lot more attention than any other game Georgia's played thus far this season. And Kirby Smart's very aware of both those points.
Environment to play in, one that I both experienced as a player and a lot of times as a coach. Got an incredible environment. Their fan base is really second to none in their atmosphere they create from the time you pull in on the buses to playing in the stadium. It's an awesome opportunity for our team to play on a national stage. It's an opportunity for a lot of our guys to play in a venue that a lot of Georgia players never got a chance to play in, and some in the future won't get an opportunity to play in.
Yeah, so listen, it's a we'll talk about that a lot this week, how long it's been since Georgia's been there, being back now, and it's the kind of thing that has a tendency to make you both remembered for a long time if you're a Georgia player and creating a memory that you'll take for yourself for a long time here. It's a huge stage. It's a proving ground here for Georgia. It's a test that we think that Georgia's ready to pass, but there's no denying this is a different kind of game than Georgia's played at any point this season, and really in a lot of ways different than anything it did in 2017. Going on the road to Notre Dame is not the same thing as going to Death Valley. There are a lot of Georgia fans trying to get in the stadium on Saturday. It was very relatively easy to take over South Bend, not quite as easy to take over this venue on Saturday, but with Dog Nation Invasion, that is exactly what the red and black folks intend to do. All right, on the subject of LSU, though, as a team, Kirby Smart kind of getting into what Ed Orgeron has provided that program. And when you listen to Kirby here, I can't help but think about his description of LSU is not necessarily what LSU fans, I think, were hoping it would be both last year when Ed Orgeron became full season coach for the first time and even this year with the changeover to offensive coordinator. This is not, I think, what LSU fans were hoping for, but this is the program they have. Here is Kirby with some compliments for the Tigers.
They got a really good football team. I think Coach Orgeron has instilled a lot of toughness in their program. They play extremely physical. The game, you know, Saturday with Florida was extremely physical, a lot of big hits, a lot of contact. It's just the way the SEC is, and you don't get weeks off in the SEC, and it's an extremely tough place to play. I think you saw that last week with the teams that played on the road in our conference, and we're going on the road this week.
So listen, you know, I have obviously talked to a lot of LSU fans over the course of the years, and the one thing that they were hoping for in the absence of the Les Miles Camp Cameron era with the bringing in Matt Canada a year ago and now Steve Ensminger taking over the offense this year, they were hoping to be more than just the physical downhill running team. They wanted to add a dynamic offense. They wanted to lean on quarterbacks more. Ed Orgeron said a lot during spring practice that LSU's hope was to throw the ball a lot more this season. And once again, it does kind of seem like they've been stuck with, and I don't want to say stuck because Burrow's had a pretty good season, but sort of a game manager style quarterback, a guy that's, you know, mostly hoping not to throw interceptions, but not necessarily making the kind of big, exciting throws into tight windows to have a chance to truly win games for you. I can't help but notice that the LSU offense is not quite what I think they hoped it would be, although still relatively dangerous. Kirby Smart went on to talk a little bit more about what LSU offensively does, and they are trying to mix a little more spread stuff into the power stuff. Here is Kirby with his assessment of that.
They have some signs of being the old, really physical LSU, come downhill, hit you right in the mouth. They run power, counter, lead. I mean, they do all the traditional fullback offense, but they also have the spread elements, and I think their quarterback does a tremendous job with that. He's a really good athlete. He runs the ball well. They were able to run quarterback runs with him. You can tell that from his transition from Ohio State. He's been able to run the ball, so they have more spread elements, yes, but they still have the traditional hit you in the mouth offense.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, what LSU is doing offensively is for the most part working. I mean, they're, you know, what, ranked 13th in the country. They've only lost once. They're better, I think, overall than people thought they would be. They've gotten the Miami win. They've gotten the Auburn win. Those wins that people didn't necessarily think the Tigers would get. But honesty compels me to admit that in terms of the original plan for the LSU offense, it's not quite working out that way. I think some of the receivers haven't stepped up the way I thought they would. Jonathan Giles, the transfer. We haven't heard a ton yet from the two big-time freshmen, Jamar Chase or Terrace Marshall, although Marshall did have a couple catches against Florida. It hasn't quite worked out that way, and we'll see if that continues against Georgia on Saturday. All right, well, we will get ready to wrap up our program here today, and we'll do so by reminding you that 18 days from right now, speaking of Florida, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We think it's a win for Georgia again there. It's our Gator Hater Countdown. We do it every day here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, and glad to have you with us as we do it. Also, really excited about seeing you tonight at Marlowe's North Lake location for what's going to be a really fun Dog Nation big game preview. And there are a lot of stuff I want to talk to you about with Jeff here today. I hate that we didn't get a chance to do that, whether it be Chris and Miles Hinton being at the game on Saturday, the J.D. Bertrand decommitment, a little bit more on Jaden Hazelwood. Looks like Georgia may have offered a 2019 quarterback in addition to one they already have a commitment from, John Rhys Plumlee. Lewis Seen's announcement tomorrow. So there was a lot of stuff we wanted to do with Jeff. We'll get a chance to do that at 6 p.m. tonight for our Dog Nation big game preview with the Marlowe's in Northlake. Love to have you there with us for that. And of course, I'll see you back here tomorrow on a Dog Nation Daily as well. Y'all have a great day, everybody. All right, and on video, we took a lot of comments before. We won't take quite as many right now. We'll get ready to do our